Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
I appreciate it, and thanks to the organizers. And actually, you can see that my proposal's changed a little bit. It's now the Office of the Examining Magistrate, because when I sent in the abstract, I really wasn't thinking about it enough. This is a preliminary examination, so I think that it makes sense to call it the Examining Magistrate. This paper is the result of a couple of things that happened in my scholarly thinking. One was a paper that I wrote a few years ago on due process in international criminal procedure, where I talked about different potential models for hybridization. And the other was an experience that I had working actually with Andrew Cayley at the ECCC, which opened my eyes to a different way of perhaps conducting investigations or examinations. And as he said, the basic architecture of that system is still sound. It just wasn't carried out properly in that situation. So that's kind of the basis for this. And so what I want to do is talk very briefly. I've got some slides that I'm going to zip through, more just to give you context. And that'll be the features of the current PE system, the problems with it. And then where I'm going to really focus my attention today is on the solution, which is the creation of this Office of the Examining Magistrate. And I'll kind of break that down. I'll talk a little bit about the potential advantages and disadvantages, and then I'll wrap up. So the current system, of course, is handled by the prosecutor, who has complete latitude in terms of investigatory subjects and topics, length of inquiry, platform for airing views of the incipient case to the public. And I'm like Carson, like the cartoon that I found there. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about very briefly are the triggers and the investigation standard. Again, just by way of review, we have referrals and we have communications. And I think we've talked enough about those in the conference so far that I don't need to go into detail. But the bottom line, as we just heard from Matt, is that is there a reasonable basis to proceed with an investigation? And then if so, the OTP submits a request for authorization. And according to Article 15.2, this means in the case of a communication that the prosecutor can seek additional information from states, organs of the UN, intergovernmental or non-governmental organizations, or other reliable sources that he or she deems appropriate and may receive written or oral testimony at the seat of the court. So even though this is just an examination, not an investigation, it's still fairly involved. There are procedural presumptions. We were just talking about Article 53. When the prosecutor receives a referral, she shall initiate an investigation unless she determines that there's no reasonable basis to proceed. So this default position is reinforced by the fact that the pretrial chamber may only review the prosecutor's decision not to proceed, but does not review an affirmative determination to proceed. And then the default position is reversed when the prosecutor receives a communication. In other words, she shall not seek to initiate an investigation unless she first concludes that it's warranted. So I just want to make sure that that basic groundwork is understood. We also have heard a lot about the different phases, right? The four different phases. Phase one, and I want to thank Amy for her presentation yesterday. And when I talk about phase one in a little bit here, you'll understand why I think it's important. But that's the initial filtering. Phase two is the jurisdiction assessment, and phase three, admissibility, and then finally in phase four, the interests of justice. Obviously, the current system has benefits. There's flexibility. That's a good thing. It can possibly deter fresh violence. It can encourage peace negotiations. It can foster positive complementarity. But the problems, I want to spend a little bit of time with you here now, which are inconsistent timelines, politicization, and uneven results. Okay, so let me talk about those a little bit. And I'll start with the inconsistent timelines. And in my paper, I look at both preliminary examinations triggered by communications. And in those, then I break it down further into expeditious OTP decisions and delayed OTP decisions. And then I look at PEs that are triggered by referrals, and I do the same kind of dichotomy in my analysis. So this map here shows you briefly, because I don't want to go in. We've heard a lot about these situations already. But these are expeditious OTP decisions, Honduras, Venezuela, Ivory Coast, Iraq, Kenya. These were decided, I would say, relatively quickly. We also have delayed OTP decisions, including Georgia, Colombia, Guinea, and Nigeria. So we have, again, this is the point is we've got inconsistency. And we see the same thing with respect to referrals. We've heard a lot about Comoros, But there's also Mali, Central African Republic 2, DR Congo, Uganda, Sudan, and Libya were extremely fast. And then I would argue that Palestine, which is ongoing now, is a slow one, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But again, what we see is a kind of schizophrenic quality to the timelines in regard to these preliminary examinations. So that's problem one. Problem two is politicization. I thought this might get a couple chuckles. You know, we've seen these quick decisions, and I quote from my paper, rush to pursue high-profile indictments with pursuit of low-hanging fruit. And we see this really in the African cases, which I think is a lot of what the African Union has been upset with. Contrast that with the non-African situations where there's been much less attention. And I realize that I've got Ocampo here, in the paper I point out some dovetailing into Bensouda. And then I've got a couple quotes here. I'll stick with Kayambos. The sad truth is that he prefers holding press conferences to reading files. He enjoys making grand statements about being the world's most powerful prosecutor, but does not spend much time diligently assessing intricate legal matters. We also have politicization with respect to situation-driven circumstances. So I mentioned Palestine a moment ago. Obviously, we're talking about very sticky Middle Eastern politics. It's a political hot potato, and the prosecutor is subjected to a lot of scrutiny and a lot of pressure. Afghanistan, why? Because the U.S. is implicated. I don't think I need to say much more. Ukraine, same, it's because Russia's implicated, and we already know that Russia's pretty angry about the Georgia situation. So it's compounded, okay? So the prosecutor is buffeted by these forces. And then in the end, what we see is a series of uneven results. And I break this down into my paper into three. One, we see the rushed preliminary examinations, and I talk about DR Congo, the fact that in Lubanga, for example, you know, we're only looking at child soldier recruitment use charges when, of course, we know there was mass sexualized violence crimes and those were not prosecuted. This has been discussed already in the conference. And then the acquittal and only 12 years for Katanga with respect to one Ituri Village incident. We have the schizophrenic preliminary examinations. Honduras would be an example, opened in 2010, closed in 2013 because no reasonable basis to proceed, open again in 2014, and then quickly closed again in 2015. And then we can also look at Cote d'Ivoire, which was opened and closed and then opened again, and the Palestine-related cases. Again, this schizophrenic quality. Reasonable basis, we've seen, if we look at the preliminary examination reports of the OTP, has been established, but then there's a failure to proceed. And we've seen that in Colombia, Guinea, which is a one-event crime scene, as we know, in the stadium. Come on, how many years should that have taken to figure out that we still don't have justice in that case, and yet the OTP doesn't want to go forward, and then Nigeria. So I go through all these in my paper. And then this is the, if you will, pièce de résistance, which is the proposed solution, and that's the creation of this office of the examining magistrate. And when I say pièce de résistance, I say that, I suppose, mindful of the fact that I'm drawing heavily from the French system, the juge d'instruction, and as well, as I pointed out in the work that I was able to do with the ECCC, the co-investigating judges. I think the inquisitorial approach is consistent with the ICC investigation and trial stages, where there's a much more active role for the court, whereas with the preliminary examination stage, there's kind of a gap, and it's kind of wide open for the prosecution to do what it will at that point. It's victim-oriented, I would submit to you, like the ICC, right? The ICC, for the first time, makes victims juridical parties in these cases, and of course, the French system, the ECCC, has a similar philosophy. So I think it's in line with the general culture of the ICC. And let me just say that there are three main areas I want to talk about with you. The stages of the process that I propose, the timeline of the process, and then some other logistical considerations. The stages, looking here, 1 to 2, would have OTP initial involvement. And again, this is where I wanted to thank Amy for her presentation yesterday. Stage one, we know, is fairly significant, even though it may not seem like that when you give a cursory overview. But here, I leave the stage one part to the OTP. So obviously the filtering function there would continue to operate. Stage two, the OTP would refer the matter to the OEM. It would have to respond to the communication of the sender of the communication within a reasonable time. I propose 6 months as to whether or not there's going to be a transfer to the OEM or not. And then for non-referral, there would be a right to appeal to the PTC, but there would be great deference for the OTP decision. It would be pursuant to an abuse of discretion standard. Stages three to four. With three, we see the OEM's initial intake assessment, where the OEM could disagree with the OTP and filter out still. And then two through four phases would be the next main thing, and that's in stage four of this process. And I would note that the OTP can continue to be engaged in the sense that it may still receive information on its own from people sending in things, and it should establish a close working relationship with the OEM. And then finally, stage five, not finally, because we'll look at stage six in a moment, but then the dossier would go back to the OTP. If phases two to four are satisfied, there would be an authorization to request opening an investigation with the PTC, the pretrial chamber, and if not, then an advice to terminate without prejudice. Stage six, if you will, is a little more involved, and here the OTP can move for reconsideration if there's a recommendation of closure. And then, if not, appeal to the PTC. And if the phases one through four process are not satisfied because the time clock ran out, and in a moment I'm going to talk about setting a 2-year or 24-month ceiling, and don't worry, there's going to be an escape valve, then they can apply, the OTP can apply to the OEM and then to the PTC if necessary for extensions. The OEM can also apply for an extension sua sponte to the PTC. And then if the OEM recommends opening an investigation, the OTP can still decide not to. The OEM has no right of appeal in my proposal on this, and so the OTP retains obviously an important power in this process. And then in cases of referral, the decision not to proceed with the investigation can still be appealed by the state or the Security Council to the appeals division the way it's set up now in Article 53. So I think that kind of takes you through a lot of the nuts and bolts, and I set this out in my paper. Again, I'm looking at a 24-month ceiling with an extension mechanism, as I pointed out before, including the OEM being allowed to do that, and then a baseline floor of 6 months. Because we saw that there were really snap decisions made on some of these preliminary examinations. However, if the OTP can show exigent circumstances as supported by the OEM's transmittal dossier, then the six-month floor could be lifted upon successful motion to the PTC. So I have this all set out in the paper. Very briefly, there are some other logistical considerations that I cover in the paper. One big one is no OTP public communications during the preliminary examination period. And if folks want to talk to me about that during the Q&A, I'm not going to go into detail on it now, but I would say that there's been grandstanding and that should not be part of the process. Personnel and resources, obviously there'd be need to be enough support staff. And then I say that we place the examining magistrate within the judiciary, okay, as the lowest rung, the division of the examining magistrate. I talk about the advantages. And I look at it in terms of retributive justice, procedural justice, and restorative justice. With respect to retributive justice, the OEM has a great degree of specialization, or would, and it would create a network of sources, and it would be in a position to do a very efficient and very, I would think, effective preliminary examination. Procedural justice, because the sword of Damocles will not be hanging over defendants who can be identified fairly easily, even at the PE stage. And then there would be a quality of arms in terms of collection of evidence. And then restorative justice, focusing on victims, because the gathering of evidence would be more neutral and a better historical record would be created, as opposed to having an adversarially focused prosecutor who is, frankly, worried more about her own agenda. The potential disadvantages, which I kind of counter, rigidity, yes, but then there are these safety valves that I talk about. Restricting prosecutorial discretion, yes, but there's already a right to appeal, and we've seen that, for example, in the Camorros case. And then ballooning red tape and expenses, except that there's going to be more efficiency, so it may be a wash or it may even be ultimately cheaper. So my conclusion is that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, and that this kind of hybridization is more in line with the ICC's culture. And thank you for your attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.